Good to see you in God's house. It's an honor to be here, and this is a wide church. I'm not too used to doing like this, but I'm going to have to do this to speak to all of y'all this morning. It's a beautiful place here, and you know, when I was a teenager, I had an aunt that stayed in the neighborhood, and I came up from Jefferson up here to Paisland to chop cotton and pick cotton or watermelons to buy my school clothes in the fall. So when I was 16 years old, I chopped cotton across the road over here. I think he was an Evans guy that owned a farm over here across 9. And I remember it was hot, and I was over there chopping cotton. And I'd look across over here every once in a while at this big old beautiful church, and I'd think to myself, I bet there's some rich people that go to church over there. Danny Martin. And I never did go to church here, but I've been in this community many times and as a teenager. But I got something I'd like to share with you before I get started into my testimony. I'm going to try my best. You listen quick, and I'll try to talk quick. And I'll try to... I know how y'all men get jittery around 12 o'clock, so I'll try to get this thing wrapped up. But I'm going to ask you men to be honest with me just for a second. How many has ever done something stupid before besides me? Okay. I'm going to feel pretty good telling this then. When I was, I bought a chainsaw after me and my wife got married, and my mother still lived in Jefferson, and they burned wood, and I was going to do my mom a big favor, and I went down there one day, and I cut her some firewood. And I threw the few sticks on the back of the truck that I didn't cut, and we were on our way back to Lancaster, me and my wife and my daughter. And we went up Highway 601 and cut through like you're going to taxi hall from Highway 601. And we crossed Lynch's River and went around the curve there, and there was about a 3-foot-long copperhead snake about that big around crossing the road. And he had got on the shoulder of the road before I got to him, and I took my old truck and I just swerved over on the shoulder of the road. Man, I was wanting to kill that snake. I don't know what it is about a man wanting to kill a snake, but you don't accomplish nothing, really. But I locked that truck down, and I backed up, and I opened the door of my truck, and I got up in the bed of my truck, and I saw that snake laying down there in the ditch. And I took one of them little limbs off the back of my pickup, and I took that thing and put about this far behind his head. I said, Faye, I said, come here and get out of the truck and hold this snake. I'm going to get out and kill it. She said, I ain't getting out of this truck. I said, come on, hold this snake. I'm gonna get a rock. I'm going to kill this snake. I ain't getting out of that truck. And I finally convinced her to get out of the truck, and she crawled up in the bed of the truck, and she held a snake. Had that stick about that far behind his head. And I couldn't find a decent rock. I wanted a rock about the size of a bowling ball. But I couldn't find me a decent rock that I felt comfortable with. I come running back to the truck. I jerked the tailgate down. I said, hold that snake. I'll fix him. And I had this old chainsaw. It was a Craftsman chainsaw. Danny, that thing had a bar on it. It looked like a 1x6 slab. It was a big, heavy chainsaw. It was blue. And I got straddled that ditch over that snake, and my wife up in the truck holding that snake for me. I jerked that chainsaw, and about the fourth time my chainsaw fired off. When that chainsaw fired up, that snake, with his back part of his body, started curling up around the stick, and my wife turned him loose on me. I give that snake that chainsaw. I'm telling you. I wish that had been some kind of stopwatch on me getting back up in that truck, because I know that would have been a speed record. But we all do stupid things at times, and I have done my share of things, let me tell you. But I want to go ahead and share my testimony with you, and I want to say to start with that I've been praying for this church, you, for a month. And because it's been a month or so since Danny had called and asked me if I would come and speak. And I take what I'm about to do very seriously. Very, very seriously. And I want to ask you men something, and women, about your testimony. You know what a bad testimony is? It's one that's not being used. Men, I know you got your money in the safe up there in the vaults at the bank. What about your testimony? Have you got it wrote down up there? It's as precious as that money is you got all saved up. Wouldn't it be nice about 100 years after you dead and gone that some of your ancestors would run across your testimony and get saved because of what they read about what you wrote down? You ought to write your testimony down. You ought to preserve it and let the whole world know what Jesus Christ has done for you. And I hope you will. I hope you will. But you know, at the end of the Second World War, my mother met this soldier. 3 days later, they were married. My mother married an abusive drunk. He was very abusive. They said he was a good man till he'd get to drinking. And then he would turn into something absolutely opposite than what he was sober. And my mother lived with him long enough to have 3 boys, and I'm the oldest of those 3 boys. And when I was 5 years old, she left him and went back to Jefferson to stay with her parents. And I was raised with my grandparents a little north of Jefferson down there below Highway 601. And I was raised in a Christian home. But my grandfather, he wasn't a kind person. I remember when I was in the first grade, preacher, that I'd asked my grandfather for help with my homework and stuff. And I'd remember him thumping me my ears and slapping me in the back of the head and telling me I was too stupid to learn and I was dumb and I was ignorant and I was going to be just like my daddy. And you know something? Before I finished the first grade, I was convinced I was invented to be a nobody. I was meant to be a nobody. That I was going to be just like my daddy. And you know, there's a poem or something I used to hear in school that says, "Sticks and stones will break your bones, but words can never hurt you." Let me tell you something. Words, they warp and twist and scar and bruise and hurt. And we need to be careful about how we use words. Even about your preacher, about your Sunday school teacher, and about your church. We need to be careful about how we use words, because we can't take them back once we turn them loose. And but I was had a wonderful praying grandmother and mother. We went to church. We didn't even have a way to travel. And preacher, I remember my grandmother many a time when she had she didn't say a 30-second blessing. She prayed out to God when she bowed her head at the table. And I've watched my grandmother many a time have to take her apron and wipe the tears out of her plate before she eat. You know something would change Providence Baptist Church if more men would leave stains at the altar, get concerned about your lost family members and loved ones. Yeah, it's good to come up here and eat a prime rib on Saturday night. And Danielle, them two were good I ate last night. They were awesome. And I'll tell you right now, if you keep cooking prime ribs every Saturday night, I believe y'all fill this church up pretty quick. It wouldn't take long. And my mother, she really loved the Lord. And, you know, I've been to church many a time with 17 people in one car. Hey, 5 or 6 of us kids would ride in the trunk and glad to be able to go. We just wanted to go somewhere. And this was a regular thing for us, just a pile of cars. This was a 47 Chevrolet that we were riding in. It wasn't a stretch limousine either. It's just a plain old car. And I thank God for the men and women that have used the back seats of their car to haul children to church, that have got mamas and daddies and that don't care. And I know there are a lot of kids like that in this neighborhood that somebody needs to go by and haul them to church. But you know, I made up my mind when I was a little fella, when I got old enough, they would nobody make me go to church. that God had the deck stacked against me and I didn't want nothing to do with no church. But I constantly saw God's hand at work in my life and the life of my family. Danny, I remember one Saturday, Mama wanted me to go to town with her, and I knew Mama didn't have much money, and I went ahead and reluctantly went, and it's about 2 o'clock on Saturday. I had to walk 3 miles to town, and we got to town and went into the grocery store, and Mama took her money, and she bought a box of salt that cost 8 cents. Mama had 2 pennies left. I wanted bubble gum with those 2 pennies. Mama wouldn't buy me any bubble gum. I got mad and I run off and left. Mama wouldn't even come home with her. Preacher, you know what Mama done with those 2 pennies? She put them in the collection plate the next morning at church. You know, I'm still drawing interest off of Mama's pennies. I thank God for the people that have put in pennies and invest in churches. I want to ask you, what are you investing in here? Are you just warming a seat on Sunday morning? Are you an investing and doing what God would have you to do here? I hope you are investing all you can, spiritually, financially, and physically, doing all you can for the building of this church, because we don't have much time left. Our time as Christians is running out. But I quit school in the 10th grade because I knew everything. I was so smart that 2 weeks before my 18th birthday, I was chopping cotton to Joe Miller for $2 a day. I mean, I really just had it going on. And when I turned 18 years old, I had an uncle that helped me get a job in the cotton mill in Lancaster. And I moved to Lancaster and met a good-looking red-headed girl up there. About 2 weeks later, I went to work up there in that cotton mill. Man, girl, I'm telling you, she had them freckles, you know, on her face with that red hair. Boy, I'm telling you, I had trouble running my job there. I really did. But I did. But things went rocking on, you know, and we dated for about a year and a half. And Keith, we started talking about getting married. And my wife went to Faith, she went to Annie Baptist Church. And I didn't like no old Baptist church. But I knew all there was to know about a church. And I called Faye, I said, I'm not getting married in no church. She said, I told her to get married at Mama's house then. She said, but my pastor wants to counsel us before he marries us. I said, okay. Preacher, I told that preacher a lie so he would marry us. He said, Wayne, have you been saved? I said, oh, yeah, I've been saved. I just ain't been ducked in that water yet. Saved, you know, things rocked on, and the conversation went to something else. When I get to running my mouth, my nose goes to running. Any of y'all ever do that? I don't know what it is about my nose. But we went ahead and got married. And you know my wife, you iron my clothes for me. She don't iron my, I had to iron my shirt. Used to this morning to get the wrinkles out of one side of it. She don't iron my clothes for me no more. And a lot of times, this shows how real the devil is. And he had a hook in my nose. And I'd promise my wife that I'd go to church with her on Sunday. And she'd have my clothes all laid out for me. A lot of times, I'd get up and get ready and refuse to go to church with her. Let's lie after lie after lie, Sunday after Sunday after Sunday. And you know something? The devil's real, man. The devil's real. And if he can keep you out of Sunday school, and he can keep you out of the Sunday night services and Wednesday night services, first thing you know, he'll start controlling more of your life. More than you think he ever will. So things rocked on, and I had an uncle that was in the Second World War, had steel plates in his head, and he was witnessing to me one hot day in July in 1977, and he just shared with me about the hand of God was on him over there in those trenches overseas, fighting him in the Second World War. And I got down on my knees in 1977 and asked Jesus Christ to forgive me of my sins and to come into my heart and save me. You know, if that's something you haven't done, I hope you'll do that this morning before you leave here. And it's so easy to become a Christian. It's so easy to become a Christian. And I was serious about what I did. And I meant business when I got down on my knees. And I went back home. I told my wife what I'd done. I said, let's go down to Mama's house. I said, I don't tell Mama. And went and told Mama. I said, but we got a problem. I ain't going out there to that old dead church. You got things as dead as Coffin's funeral home. We ain't going down to a dead Antioch church. You know something? If you ain't right with God, this church ain't right for you. The car ain't right. It ain't right. The seats ain't right. The Sunday school teacher probably ain't right. But you know something? If you'll come down here and fall on your knees and get right with Jesus, everything around here will be all right. Even the graveyard will be all right with you. You know that? And it is amazing what God can do when we allow Jesus to get us right on the inside. She told me, she said, well, I'll go to church before you want to go to church. So we started going to church. She told church across town at one of them shouting churches. Let me tell you something. Again, I say, it don't make no difference if they got rattlesnakes or whatever they got. If you ain't got Jesus and you don't go to church to serve him, you're not going to be satisfied and you're not going to fit. I got baptized just a few weeks after. You're not there going to that church. And, you know, I had a race car then. I went in business for myself and I had three kids. And, you know, man, I had to work 6 days a week. And, you know, when they passed that collection plate, steal God's money. You know, I had to steal his money. You know something? They'll curse on you. Ask and take God's money. You know that. If they curse on you. I know that. I was told this morning, I went by my Sunday school class and stayed a little while. I was told a man that's become very wealthy in life thanks to poker machines. He just found out Thursday that he's got colon cancer. And it's done spread into his kidneys. And he's got a lot of money. I just hope he gets right with God through this, because it ain't about hoarding up money, folks. It's about uplifting Jesus. That's what it's all about. That's why I'm here today, Jesus. And that's why God has put you here, to uplift and exalt Jesus Christ and glorify him. It don't make no difference if you can't sing or can't half talk. It don't make no difference. Just bring singer on Jesus and the way you can. And you know, it wasn't long. We wasn't in that church 6 months. And you know, I had that race car and that we was building a new race car. And I quit going to church and my wife went back to Antioch. And I said, I ain't going to that old dead church. I went to Antioch. You know, I was 27 years old and had never put a beard in my mouth. But we were finishing up a race car and we were working all night on a Friday night. And I said this at 4 o'clock at night. Guys, I'm tired of drinking Pepsis and Mountain Dews. I'd like to have something different. And, you know, a friend of mine, Kenny White, he went to the store and got us a beer. For the first time in my life, I turned one beer to my mouth. It was almost 4:30 in the morning. And, you know, I liked it. And you know something, guys? Let me tell you something. Please stay away from my stuff. They glorify it on TV every time you turn the TV on or open up a magazine. Alcohol is glorified. But let me tell you something. There's death and destruction in that stuff. There really is. Let me tell you something. Death and destruction in that stuff. And it will control you. It will wreck your life. And there's a lot of hurt in alcohol. And you know, a lot of me, Mr. Big, didn't nobody tell me what to know. And I just started drinking all the time. I do drink on the job. And I let my friends smoke dope. I let them come to my place of business and smoke dope. And the pill poppers, I invited them in. You know, their back hurt, and they'd take 4 or 5 Percodans. It's like me. Give me 2 or 3, you know, and I'd give them some whiskey, something, and my other buddies would share the pot, you know, we'd smoke dope and pop pills and drank whiskey. And You know, sometimes they have somebody play the music, you know. And I live beside of my business. You know well where I live and where my business. And I bought a lot of parts. And since though Keith here's, Keith was a good salesman. A lot of times I think I was going to keep a lot of money. Come Friday and Keith come by and run us, have a lot of loan parts. And I'd be broke before he just cleaned me out. Best out. He was a great salesman. I wish I had a car lot and had you selling cars for me. We could really move some cars. He's a great salesman. But you know, see, Grandma's prayers. You remember talking about Grandma's prayers earlier? You know, it's hard preaching prayers made through Mama's prayers, Grandma's prayers. And you know something, brothers and sisters, you'll never waste a prayer. There's never been a prayer that's been wasted. And there never will be. There never will be. Prayer will be. Your prayers are important. So you keep praying for your preacher and your director and these teachers around here and these people that work with children. You keep praying for them. You keep praying for them. And I tell you what, every chance you get, you give this preacher, y'all quit patting him on the back and give him a hug and stick your $100 bills in his pocket, you know. You know, somebody patting him on the back. He don't need a pat on the back. Man, put some green stuff in his pockets and give hug on him. Hug on him at the stand. Because, you know, I never met him yesterday afternoon, but he loves y'all. This man loves y'all. He cares about you. He cares about your families and your children. About you. And I'm so proud of you, brother, and the great work you're doing here. And I just hope and pray that God continues to bless you in a mighty way. And I know he will. But you know, things rocked off. In 1980, I had the best sponsor. I had Burger King sponsored my race car in 1980. I had the best sponsorship that I raced for had and had I'd ever had to drink. And that was going to be my year. And you know, things started going downhill. And wasn't a thing, but I was running from God. And it, guys, you can't outrun God. You can't get away from his will. And I wrecked and tore up all my racing stuff and blew all my racing engines. All before the season was halfway over, my car wrecked and I didn't have a good engine to run. So I started racing, so I was selling my racing equipment. I sold all my racing equipment in 1980. After that, I laid my health off. I kept drinking 7 days a week. And I sold my wrecker and drank 7 days a week. Kept drinking. Christmas of 1980, my wife had to buy tricycles for our oldest two kids on a credit to buy because of my lifestyle. And I went up to the liquor store before liquor store closed for Christmas and got the biggest porta little store they had. And I got drunk Christmas Eve all night and couldn't help my wife put those two bicycles together. I got up Christmas Day about 11 o'clock and got right back in that bottle. And I drug my wife 11 o'clock, three kids to Monroe, North Carolina. And we spent Christmas Day in 1980 with a bunch of drunks and dope heads. I remember falling in the kitchen door that night about 7 o'clock. And the next thing I remember is waking up and I was looking at the clock. It was 2:30. And I got up and I noticed my wife wasn't in the bed. And I went down the hall. My two boys wasn't in their room. My daughter wasn't in her room. And I went in the kitchen and I put the kitchen light on and looked at the clock and it's 2:30. I drank me a couple of glasses of water and I turned and looked and there was two folded sheets of notebook on the corner of the kitchen table. You know, my wife couldn't talk to me. If she'd try to talk to me about my lifestyle, I would jump at her, I'd bark at her. I would tell her what I deserved. And how hard I worked and what a provider I was. I was always beating her over the head with stuff like that. But you know, I was always what I deserved. because that's what I was putting my family through. You know, for the first time in my life, I read through those 2 pages my wife had written. And I read the end of that kitchen table, and I took, for the first time in my life, sat there and quit looking at preachers and deacons and other people in life, and I took a good look at Wayne Kersey. With nothing but the sound of an old refrigerator there in the kitchen. You know, and I got down on my knees, I was running on the petition between the living room and the kitchen. And, preacher, I left a lot of tears on the floor that night. I asked for forgiveness, and I begged for help. I told God, I said, Lord, I don't know where my family's at, and I don't know what I've done. But if you don't know, put my marriage back together and help me with my addiction, help me, I'll do all I can the rest of my life to live for you. That commitment I made that night drunk is why I'm standing here right now. That commitment I made that night. I want to ask you about your commitment that night. If you've ever accepted Jesus Christ as your Lord and Savior, you've made some promises. I know you've made some promises. Have you sat down on the promises you made? What about your commitment? You made them. About an hour later, as a car pulled up in the yard, my wife jerked the kitchen door open and came stomping by. It was about 3:30 then. I said, Faye, who are you? Who are you? She said, I'm with my sister. We moving to North Carolina. And, you know, we men are big and bad. We can go at the moon and climb mountains and stuff, but we big. But we ain't good as we ought to be at saying, I'm sorry, are we? No. And, but you know, God had done beat to the point to where I was willing to do whatever it took me. And I hope there's some men sitting here this morning that willing to do whatever it takes to get back in a right relationship with God and go ahead and do what God's called you to do. And I told Faye, I said, Faye, I want you to forgive me to start with. I said, if you'll give me another chance, you're going to have a different husband from now on. I said, those 3 kids are going to have a different dad from now. And she just stood there simmering for a minute or two. You know how bad these redheaded people are, you know. She said, I tell you, I'm going to give you another chance, but it's your last one. And tell you what, I went out there to the car and apologized to my sister-in-law. And, put my 3 kids back to bed. And, you know, preacher, from that day forward, Percy family never got ready to go to church on the morning. We get ready to go to church on Saturday night. Sunday. You know, a lot of people mess up Sunday school. Coming to church because they argue and fuss halfway to church because your hair ain't quite right and your nerves is all tore up and all that because you had to iron clothes in your nose and take a bath and cook breakfast and fix the kids. You know, all this. Hey, clear the devil on Saturday night. Push him out of the way. Get prayed up. Get filled up. Get in the Word. Study your Sunday school lesson. And you know something? I want to say one more thing about the lifestyle that I'd live. You want to know, folks, young people, listen. You know, Satan will convince you that the pig pen is a Holiday Inn if you'll listen to him. He'll convince you of that. He'll convince you, if you'll listen to him, that you need, you are enough for your standards. But please don't listen to him. Stay in the church, stay in Sunday school, and be obedient to your parents, and do what God would have you to do. And you know where we went to church that Sunday morning? You know that church I'd been putting down all them years, and talking about how remember old church and dead it was? Yep. That's where we went. Sunday morning, we was early for Sunday school. I don't like being late for church. No, sir. I believe in. And I don't believe in being late for a prime rib either, Danny. I'm telling you, I sure enough won't never be late for one of them. But, you know, I went into that Sunday school class, bro. And that woman, she taught as good a lesson as I've ever heard in my life. And after Sunday school, I went into church. Man, that preacher, he preached a wonderful sermon. Just as soon as he gave the invitation, I got up and I was the first one at the altar. I said, preacher, I'm a Christian and I know I'm saved. And I've been out in sin and I've really had some problems and I've made a mess of my life. Will you pray for me? Really have and pray for my family. And if y'all would have me, I'd like to be a part of our church. And we went down to the altar and he prayed with me. And yeah, sure. You know, all three of my kids have been saved out of Antioch Baptist Church. I've been a deacon out there. I'm a school teacher out there, a training union teacher. I'm on the finance team now. And, you know, the Lord has allowed me to do. He's allowed me to lump me 85 boys to Jesus Christ. Since that lead, son, 85 boys. You know, I'm the 85 boys and girls in this neighborhood. I know you could reach out to and minister to. They lead to become Christians. I know they are. And lead, I know they are. And, you know, God started blessing me. And you know something else? You know, Satan, y'all know that Satan and the demons of hell, that they are, you know, they were in the manufacturing business, hell. Y'all know that. They were in the manufacturing business. Man, they made wedges. That's the only thing that God ever taught me, that Satan and the demons of hell, them God is, they make wedges. And they know how to use them. You know where they like to put wedges at? Between a preacher and his deacon. Or between a Sunday school teacher and between a preacher and a person in the class. Or between the choir director and a preacher. They know how to use wedges. Or the piano player, the organ player, or the drummer. Satan and the demons of hell know how to use wedges. You know something here this morning? They might be somebody over on the side of the church that when the invitation's given, you just go up to them and say, hey, me and you just need to go up to the altar and pray a little bit. I ask for you for some forgiveness. You know, that kind of thing heals the church and blesses the church. Kind of thing is a church to go forwards and to flourish and to be the kind of cause of the house that Jesus died on the cross for it to be. But you know, God started blessing me. And you know, I believe a man gets saved, I believe a man pays bills. That's why I believe that. I got my doubts on a man's bills. He won't pay his bills and he tell me he's a Christian. I don't know. But you know, I started paying. I tell you, I had plenty of them, and it took me years to pay my bills and to get my bills and my credit strike. I paid every one of them. I paid every bill I owed. And I apologized to them when I paid them because I owed an apology. And things started rocking on, and I'm on a Christian lake team, and I go to different churches and share my testimony with that lay team, and you know, God has really blessed me. And my daughter, she is married and got two girls, and she works for Founders in Lancaster. And my second child is Mike Kersey, is a wrestling coach and a teacher at Indian Land High School. And my youngest son, Clayton Kersey, he lives in Charleston, North Charleston, and works for software company, does work for the military, and God has really blessed me. I've really been doing good, and God has really blessed me in a lot of ways. Financially, God has blessed my business, and He blessed us really with sell a bunch of rental houses and a 4-acre farm in Oak Hill community, and God be blessed and blessed and blessed. But you know, I was a church God is blessed. The road for me, I'd never spoken at Hyde Park Church, 3/4 mile from where I live. And for me to speak on Saturday afternoon up there, they were having a big family. They asked her, October the 1st at 6 o'clock. I told them, yeah, I'm very glad to speak. And Clayton's birthday is September the 1st. So Mike went to Charleston, him and his wife, to be with Clayton down his birthday on September the 1st. Mike's birthday, is September the 13th. And Clayton couldn't curse him back up the following week. So he told Mike, he said, "Couldn't you come to the month? I'll come up and we'll celebrate your birthday." So October the 1st, Clayton came up from Charleston. And they went up to Mike's house in Indian Land to watch the Gamecocks play. At halftime of the ball game, one of Mike's wrestlers had come and up with one of these razor side-by-side four-wheelers and parked it at the back of Mike's house. Mike and Clayton had the grill going and it went out in my time to turn over some hamburger patties. And out of half, it was Mike and Clayton and Mike's three-year-old son. Clayton said they were standing there talking at the grill, had the grill on the ground on their deck. And said Mike just looked over at the four-wheeler there at the end of the house. And Mike walked over and got on his four-wheeler. One of his students at school walked over the four-wheeler. And Clayton said he heard Mike say, "Well, how do you..." Mike didn't even know how to crank the thing up. "Well, how..." Clayton said, "Daddy, I don't know what the third word was that Mike said." But Mike started the four-wheeler up, Mike said, and didn't buckle his seatbelt. And the four-wheeler was aimed toward the back of the lot. Mike stood off and went about 110 feet and started making a right turn. And when he started making this right turn, it was in four-wheel drive, and you could see where the tire, right turn, it was digging in, the dirt. And this is unreal of a short distance, but much longer than the length of this sanctuary here. And you could see where the tracks on the right side went away. And he went about a third of the track feet from the time he started turning. And that thing turned over about 30 feet, and he fell out and it rolled over. And so Clay called me. I was supposed to be at Hyde Park to speak at 6 o'clock. I was buttoning up my shirt when the phone rang. And it's my son Clayton said, "Daddy, whatever I'm doing, drop it and come on now to Mike's house. What are you doing?" He's had an accident. Me and my wife jumped in the car and I stopped up at Hyde Park. And I told the preacher, I said, "Preacher, I can't speak this afternoon. My son just had an accident." And he said, "Well, let me pray for you right quick." So he prayed for me and we took off up there, and the ambulance was coming out from behind Mike's house when we drove up in the driveway. And I lifted Mike up to CMC in Charlotte, and we went up there. And you know, things are supposed to be all right when you're doing God's will, and you're trying to do God all you can for the Lord, and trying to be faithful, and trying to be uplifting the church, and be just doing all you can do. You know, things are supposed to be all right. And we were up there in about 3 hours, and to be all right, the doctor came out, and he said, "You know, Mike's condition is sufficient." He said, on a scale of 15, with 15 being a good recovery number, your son's about 10. And he said, "Well, y'all can go back and see him now if you want to." And Danny, I went down that hallway. My 210-pound son was a real businessman, always taking care of himself, real strong and healthy. Keith, he was laying there with blood coming out of his ears and his eyes and his mouth and his nose. And they had a large pipe with a hose in his throat to keep his lungs working. Water. You know, I cried and prayed like I've never cried. And I prayed in my life. But it wasn't God's will for Mike to get better. But you know, his vital life support. They were three college graduates that slept on the floor behind his bed on a cement, cold cement floor. They refused to leave that room. Two of those men were state champion wrestlers. And the third young man was Kamal McElwain, a black kid that Mike helped raise, basically. And Kamal didn't have a daddy, and they moved down from up north and moved in the land community. And he wrestled and played football. And Mike helped get Kamal a college scholarship to go to Newberry. And Kamal went to Newberry for 4 years, and never owned a car. And he called when he was graduating. He called Mike and said, "Mike, will you come over to graduate college at my graduation and go out on the field as my dad?" And Mike said, "Yeah, I will." So Mike took a day off dad work to go to Newberry with Kamal. And Kamal came home from college, and Mike called me one day. "Daddy, I need a car." I said, "How much?" He said, "About $1,000. Got him a car. I said, "What you gonna do with this car?" So I got. He said, "I'm gonna give it to Kamal." He said, "Me and Aaron, we've hired Kamal, a personal NFL trainer there in Charlotte, to get him ready to play pro football." And trainer, he said, "He's got to be up by 4 hours in the morning, 3 hours in the afternoon." Lord. So he did this all summer, last summer.
Oh.
And when the strikes were over, Atlanta Falcons called Kamal, and he went down there and spent 5 weeks, and they cut him in the first round of cuts. And so at the time of Mike's accident, the Minnesota Vikings was communicating with Kamal, and a couple of weeks later, the New Orleans Saints signed Kamal McElwain to a contract. So one of Mike's contracts, boys is on the football team with the New Orleans Saints. And I'm going to share this with you. I mean, after 12 o'clock, the buffet is calling. But you notice, Mike had another wrestler, a little skinny, red-headed kid, just the average kid, nothing, no big muscles or nothing, but his mom was faithful about bringing him to practice. He did good wrestling, and after he graduated, he did good. He volunteered for the Army. After basic, they sent him to Afghanistan. And his name was Michael Swan. And Michael came back from Afghanistan and told Mike this story. He said it was 150 degrees over there one day, and said his platoon leader told him to get ready and pack up all the water they could carry and sent them out on a mission. He says 115 degrees, and he said, he drunk most of his water going to the 25-mile march they went on. He said when they got there, all they wanted to drink was hot tea, and they were afraid it was tainted, and none of the soldiers would drink the hot tea. And he said they started back, and he's one of the smallest men in the company, and he said he drank up all his water right away and said, "Went a piece full." And he just got dizzy-headed and passed out. He said he hit the sand. He said the first sound he heard was Coach Kersey saying, "Michael Swan, get up. Don't lay there and feel sorry for yourself. Get up. Get up." And Michael Swan said, "I got back up and got back in formation and made it on my back." And he came by Mike's house when he came home, and I want to leave me and thank Mike for saving his life over in Afghanistan Army. You know, I think God sent me down here to tell somebody in this building here this morning to get back here, to get back up, to get up, to get back doing what God's called you to do, and to be what God's called you to be. I'm going to ask the organist or pianist or call you, however you'll handle it, would you do just as I am? Because that's handling it. God wants us to come just as we are. A lot of people, you talk to them about getting right with the Lord, they say, "Well, I'm working on it, I'm fixing it." We can't fix anything. Jesus can. Jesus can help us. He can lead us. He can guide us. He can fix our marriage. He can fix our finances. He can do what needs to be done. You know, if you need somebody to cry with whatever your need is here this morning, God will meet that need. Pray. And I hope you men will man up and do what God's called you to do. And you know something? I'm going to be the first one of you to do. Because I have struggles every day. Every day. I need a closer walk with the Lord than I had today. I do. I want you to pray for my family. You're really struggling. We're really struggling. I'm telling you, like there's not a day goes by that I don't cry. But I know God loves me. And I know Jesus is there. And I know it's going to be all right. And I know this is going to see Mike again. I think God allowed Mike's accident to make me to look more like home. This is not home down here, brothers. Heaven is our home. Heaven is our home. And after you're prepared to go there this morning, you come on and do what God hope you to do, brother pastor.